Joining us in the KEXC studios this morning is Barry Simonson. He's the director of Line 3 Pipeline Execution from Enbridge Energy. Is that right?
That's correct. Thank you.
Thanks for coming in today, Barry. I thought it'd be good for us to get kind of an overview of what's going on with Enbridge and with Line 3. How many pipelines does Enbridge have throughout northern Minnesota?
Very good question. Enbridge has right now 6 pipelines north of Clearbrook and 7 south of Clearbrook. We have been a vital component of crude oil transportation throughout Minnesota and through the country for 65 years. So right now, we do have these 7 pipelines that safely operate and transport crude oil. And to be very honest, there is approximately, on a daily basis, 2.8 million barrels of oil that flows through our transportation system on a daily basis.
Is it only oil? Do the pipelines carry anything else?
Predominantly crude oil, natural gas liquids throughout northern Minnesota. And there is one pipeline that does flow north into Canada that assists with transportation back from Canada with crude oil into our system.
So we hear a lot about Line 3. Where is Line 3, first of all?
Line 3 in terms of timing for regulatory?
No, where is it geographically,
sure.
I guess?
Line 3, if you think about it from a timing perspective, we have Line 1, Line 2, Line 3, and then other lines that were subsequently installed. So Line 3 was installed back in the 1960s. It was the third pipeline that was installed for the company. And over time, just based on the materials that were used as standard back in the 1960s, we have seen an increase in potential anomalies that need to be remediated on Line 3 to the point where we as a company, with all of our stakeholders, have decided to replace Line 3 in its entirety, all the way from Canada down to Superior, Wisconsin.
What is it made of?
Well, Line 3 is made out of carbon steel, just like new pipelines are. But as technology advances and has advanced throughout the years, we will be replacing Line 3 with a high state-of-the-art pipeline, high carbon grade steel, with coatings, fusion bond epoxy, which is now a predominant coating on pipelines that assist with any issues that may arise in the future.
So what happens once the old Line 3 something new comes in, what happens to the old line?
Once Line 3 is permitted and constructed, the old Line 3 will then be what's termed deactivated. Enbridge will be deactivating that line in its entirety. And that process, which is governed by federal regulatory authority, will be purged of oil. We will then be cleaning the line. And then we will be segmenting it in certain locations so that it does not and will not unequivocally operate in the future. And so we will be leaving the line in place as opposed to pulling the pipe out of the ground because it is standard practice to do that. But also the fact that Line 3 predominantly is within the pipeline corridor in the middle. And when you try to introduce removal of an existing pipeline or a deactivated pipeline in a corridor where you have active pipelines, there is a safety concern because what's paramount to the company is to ensure that we protect the environment as well as the general public with our operating system.
We're talking to Barry Simonson from Enbridge Energy today. So, as a company, you must have lots of precautions in place if there were a spill, and that's probably a very complicated answer, but can you tell us a little bit about that if something were to happen?
No, that's a very good question. Preventative maintenance is the key to ensuring safety in terms of operability of our pipeline system. And that goes into place between the inception of a project being planned. So the routing is very important. The installation or the quality control of the pipe being made is a key component, as well as all the associated materials. But then also when we get into construction, training of workers, whether they're employees or they're contractors, is also very paramount to safety and quality of our pipelines being installed. Now, when we get into the specifics of material and safeguards that we place onto our pipeline system, we do install sectionalizing valves that are placed strategically to protect A, the environment from if there was ever to be a release, and I'm talking about water bodies, rivers, population centers. So we do go through a very rigorous process there. But we also have communications to all of our valve sites. When I talk about that, I'm talking about we have electricity, we have communication, and we have a control center that can real time be able to know what the pressure temperature is at those valve sites. So it's real time, and if there are issues that arise, we can shut those valves down and our pump stations down accordingly. In addition to that, we have a very robust operation and pipeline integrity group that maintains our pipeline system. We have aerial patrols that are conducted on a frequent basis. We also do inline inspection on our pipelines with pigs, if you will. They're really a tool that goes through the pipeline, traverses through, that can tell if there's any issues that may arise. So there's many safeguards that we employ to ensure that our pipelines are safe.
I'm curious about how this all happens, whether it's the old Line 3 or the new pipelines going in. How do you get pipelines to go under these big water bodies of water? I think a lot of people wonder how that could even possibly happen.
That's a very good question. I think it goes back to technological advancement in installation of not just pipelines, but other infrastructure has created a component which we call horizontal directional drilling. And that is a mechanism by which we actually can install a pipeline underneath a river, underneath a lake, if need be, underneath roads, and to protect sensitive resources where there is no excavation, there is no disturbance to that water body itself. So it's actually an installation that, if you looked at it on a drawing, it would look like a big curve or a big arch. And you'd think, well, steel can't do that, but it can. And we use very rigorous engineering design techniques, and we also hire specialized contractors that do that work. In fact, to put a real life sense on this, we do cross the Mississippi River, which has been brought up as a very sensitive resource, which we as a company also agree to. We've crossed the Mississippi River many times in the past here, actually upstream in Bemidji. There's two locations there. And we did do two successful directional drills, I should say four, back in 2009 and 10 underneath those water bodies. And we actually have been operating our pipeline since for over 65 years in the locations of the Mississippi River. So we as a company take the environment very, very, very dear to us, and we employ techniques that are amenable to the environment for installation and operability.
Why the need for a new pipeline?
That's a good question also. Line 3, as I mentioned before, has had a lot more maintenance to it in the past. And as a lot of people in this area have seen along Highway 2, there's been a very large amount of integrity digs on Line 3. And that's preventative maintenance also. Based on our pipeline integrity scope of work that we do on Line 3 and the rest of our lines, we've found many more cases of having to go and investigate areas that we may have external corrosion. There may be stress corrosion cracking, essentially areas where we need to go through and pinpoint potential issues that may arise and mitigate those accordingly. Now, over time, what our integrity group has shown is that over the next 15 years, we would have to conduct in just the U.S. alone 4,000 plus integrity digs along Line 3. And that in and of itself has grown and will grow. So that disturbance to not just the land, but perpetual landowner engagement to get in and actually do those integrity digs, as well as the fact that we have voluntarily reduced the pressure, and I should say flow and pressure of Line 3 down to a point where it's almost half what the original Line 3 could and did flow. So we're actually restoring the capacity of Line 3 to its original potential and what it has operated in the past.
I have a couple of questions. You mentioned landowners. How does that work, your relationship with landowners and putting in new pipelines or doing integrity? What did you call them?
Integrity digs.
How does that work?
How does that work? That's a good question also. So landowners are a very important part of our, not just our ongoing operations of our existing lines, but when we propose a new pipeline, landowner engagement is vital. because we do need private easement from landowners. So information sharing between the company and landowners in order to acquire easement and or in order to continue being a good steward to the environment and to the landowners is vital. So we have had on line three over the past 2 or 3 years, we do have a land services group that does deal with landowners and does share information back and forth of where we're proposing a pipeline and what their concerns may be. We also employ our engineering group and construction to ensure that landowners are their questions that may be technical are addressed, and we accommodate those in many, many cases. In fact, for line three at this point in time with private landowner easements, we're at about 95% acquired, which is very important. It shows that we as a company, we value our landowners and we're able to work with them accordingly.
People who might be opposed to this pipeline, they wonder why you aren't just taking out the current line three. Why can't you do that, or what's Enbridge's take on that?
That's a very good question also, and we have had that posed before. And the reason why we're not taking the pipeline out of the ground, and that's our proposal, is that this isn't a single pipeline that's out in an agricultural land. We have, like I mentioned before, we have an operating system that has six pipelines, in some locations, seven in others. And if you were to try and pull out the existing line three, the risk associated with not just the existing infrastructure that we have in place is that's one. Number two, the potential for environmental disturbance. I shouldn't say potential, it would be a reality, because you would be essentially almost like building a new pipeline, if you will. So it'd almost be two, because you would have to pull that old line out of the ground. So there would be disturbance, unequivocal disturbance to that land. So I think those are the two large components, plus landowner disruption would be very, very real if we were to pull that out of the ground.
And you said we can move into what the proposed for the new pipeline is, but I'm also curious, you mentioned since it is a pretty old pipeline, 60 some years old, right? Mm-hmm. Will you continue to monitor what might be happening from those materials that were used back then, if it does anything to the environment, or...
Let me answer it this way.
Okay.
So we would still continue to act like line three was a live pipeline. Let's put it that way. The only difference is that line being deactivated, we will not have hydrocarbons in it. It will be cleaned. But because it is part of the existing Enbridge system, we will continually monitor that right away. We will be putting cathodic protection on that line, keeping cathodic protection on that line, which cathodic protection is used to prohibit corrosion from occurring on our pipelines.
So let's talk about the proposed new pipeline, where it's going to be, where you're at with it.
Right now, we are, I believe, on year two of line three in terms of the regulatory process. Line three does traverse through North Dakota, predominantly Minnesota, and then also Wisconsin. Right now in Minnesota, we are going through the regulatory process, and the first part would be within the PUC we have coming up with the Department of Commerce, as well as DNR and PCA together are putting together a draft environmental impact statement. We do expect that to come out sometime in early April, and then there will be a public informational process that the agencies will be proposing within the state of Minnesota along the preferred route, as well as route alternatives that have been proposed by the general public agencies, etc. So that's probably going to happen in April, May of this year. And then we will get to, we're hopeful that the Department of Commerce will come out with a final EIS sometime in August. And then we will traverse further into the contested case proceedings in the fall, winter of 2017, with the administrative law judge proceeding over those. And we do expect to have, in 2018, permit decisions from the Public Utilities Commission. And so we're hopeful to start construction on Line 3 in the latter half of 2018. We're looking at hopefully the winter of 2018-19 and full construction in 2019.
Are there a lot of new jobs involved in this kind of a process? Or what? Can you give me kind of an idea of how many people it goes behind putting in something new like this?
Yes, there's two components to that also, and I look at it in this way. There's pre-construction and there's during construction. Right now we're pre-construction, so we're planning. We've been planning for quite some time. We do have a very robust group of professionals back in Duluth Superior, as well as in the Midwest, that's working on this project from every facet, from engineering to public affairs to land regulatory. So we do have, I couldn't give you the exact number between full-time and contractors, but we do have probably close to about 75 to 80 people working either directly or indirectly on the project. Now, when we get into construction, we will most likely see, and we're looking at union labor for our construction with qualified contractors. It could be between 2,000 to 3,000 to 4,000 workers, depending upon the time that we can start and the duration that we expect to build. And a lot of those jobs are coming from local cities like Grand Rapids, like Bemidji. I think it goes to show that being geographically situated in northern Minnesota for the last 65 years, a lot of people within this region have counted on energy infrastructure, i.e. Enbridge, for high-paying jobs. And one area that I'd like to point out is that these are not short-term jobs. These are long-term jobs because union laborers, this is what they do. This is what they're experts on. So if there's a job here in Minnesota, they're going to work here in Minnesota. If it's in a different part of the country, they're going to work in a different part of the country if they can. So we support our union laborers and our communities, and they support us.
Anything we might have missed or you want people to know about what's going on with?
Well, I think one thing that needs to be, that the general public and those interested parties need to look at is where they're getting their facts from. I think it's very important because we have the internet's going to tell you, you can search for Enbridge Line 3 and there's a lot of information out there. I think people need to be open-minded where they're getting their information from, and websites like Enbridge.com, EnbridgeUS.com, if you're looking at a Line 3 informational website, I think those are very important resources because we are the applicant of Line 3 replacement project, but we also want to make sure that the facts are out there because this is our business. This is what I've been doing for 16 years. So we want to make sure that information that's being relayed to the public has accuracy to it. And we feel strongly about that. Well, I thank you for having us today. And I personally feel I'm from northern Minnesota. I live up here. I know that Enbridge is a vital component to our economy in northern Minnesota, as well as mining, as well as other industries. And we want to continue to make sure that our pipelines that we safely operate continue to do so to keep our water safe.
That's Barry Simonson, Director of Line 3 Pipeline Execution for Enbridge Energy.